Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Roan. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
I just can't wait to do, you know, 45 to 50 minutes on whether step back threes and fouls therein, you know, is whether the league's kind of, you know, screwing the Rockets ultimately. That's what I care about.
That's a good joke, Carter. We got a special guest today, and we have brought him on because he is an expert in this field. Now officially friend of the pod, whether he likes it or not, Andrew Sharp from Sports Illustrated is here to break down the 2018-2019 season of Marquese Chris. Isn't that right, Andrew?
Yeah, exactly. I was expecting to come on here and talk about Colin Sexton's development as a pull-up jump shooter in the second half of the season. That's about the only thing I've got on the cast.
I remember actually when we went to ask you the first time about coming on, you're like, just so we're clear, I haven't watched a second of the Cavaliers.
I felt pretty bad because I really did. I think I watched like a game and a half total of the Cavs this season.
That's fair, and that's probably good for your health. One of my favorite moments from that still was they were playing the Wizards, and you're like, Colin Sexton probably is going off for a career high because he's playing against John Wall, and sure as shit, he got a career high that
night. I just want to note that Justin had a perfect opportunity to make a that's as many games as Carter watched this year joke, and he didn't.
And I appreciate good, showing that. Some restraint, you know?
Yeah, I think that's really nice of you.
I let our listeners go with that, but where I actually want to kick this off on, because I was listening to the most recent Open Floor, which our listeners should know that is one of our favorite podcasts. We reference it all the time, and that's a big part of why you're on. But I was getting mad because I already hate the Houston Rockets, and just listening to you and Ben breaking everything down just made me hate the Houston Rockets even more. And I want your opinion, Andrew. Are they the least likable underdog of all time?
I think you certainly have to have that conversation this week. And I guess here, let me start by saying I was prepared to just like bury James Harden for life if he no-showed that game two. We're recording this on a Wednesday night and Tuesday night against the Warriors. I really wasn't sure what to expect from Harden. He went out with the poked eye after the, like a couple minutes in the first quarter, came back, was playing pretty terribly. And then credit to him, he did have like a pretty nice night dealing with some really tough Warriors defense. And I was impressed by the fight he showed in that game. Having said all that, now that I've said one nice thing about the Rockets, this is just the lamest shit I have ever seen from a professional basketball team. I can't believe it. They've taken a lot of heat this week. I don't know if they've taken enough heat because, number one, this is like the least cool thing we've ever seen from a basketball team. But additionally, I do think it's like low-key disgraceful if we want to start talking about like integrity of the game and bad faith and some of the – like, you can get kind of preachy about the way they're approaching this stuff. And then additionally, I'm just like, look, this is the wackest response possible to a game one loss. And so I wonder whether this is something that's going to get held against the Rockets and Harden for the rest of this little era they have down there. And maybe it should, because like, I'm honestly taken aback by how shameless they've
been. You know, it's funny. Marcus Thompson wrote that article for The Athletic where he was basically like, the Warriors wouldn't do this. And Cavs Twitter definitely had their fun with it because it's like the Warriors complain all the time. But I actually, yeah. I galaxy brained my way into thinking, you know what? They wouldn't fucking do this.
Like, which says a lot.
It's
as
not
a
that
Cavs
they
fan.
Won't complain. It's that they wouldn't. It's not that they're complaining. It's that they're complaining about something that happened so long ago. Like, even if they had released an audit of game one of this year, wouldn't you feel better just a little bit?
No, absolutely I'd feel better. And I'm glad you made that point on the Warriors, because there were a lot of people on Twitter who like responded to Marcus Thompson's thing by screenshotting the Warriors like being fined for complaining to the refs or something like that. But like, that stuff happens all the time.
The scope of what this is.
Constantly. Yeah. Well, and even the scope within game one, where the Rockets on every single possession were kicking their legs out and trying to draw contact, trying to draw fouls, and then losing their minds when the refs weren't giving them the calls. Like, that was different. That's a different scale than what typical playoff teams do when they're working the refs. And like the Rockets were doing that in the middle of like a 1-2 possession game with the best team in the league. And I was just like baffled that that was really their strategy. And that's the way they wanted to play this. And again, I think it's something that like is going to be tough to shake going forward, regardless of how this series plays out from here. And it's tough because like, I think a lot of NBA writers have to say this, but like every time I've dealt with Daryl Morey, he's been really cool, very smart, and you know, given all kinds of time and interesting insight. And so it's just kind of weird to see them adopt this strategy.
It's loser
and this
mentality.
Kind of. It's like this persecution complex. It's like, dude, like this is playoff basketball. And if you guys are going to be playing for calls the way they do and have, like, you got to live with some no calls here and there.
And that's what drives me nuts, is it comes from the top down. And it's something that I think Toronto kind of purged themselves from. I don't know if they'd ever come out and say it, but I think part of the reason they even fired Dwayne Casey was because the narrative was always nobody respects us, nobody wants us to win, the league doesn't want to see us win. And anytime anything ever went wrong, the team would just completely unravel. And when the margins are that damn thin, it like I just start looking at other things. Like, okay, you lost a 1-2 possession game here, but you also gave up a first for Amon Shumpert. There is a million other things that you could point to that caused your team to lose. And it just, it drives me nuts because it's Morey, it's Harden, it's Chris Paul. And Bomani Jones actually said it best. He said James Harden's entire game is insurance fraud. Like, he's that guy that's throwing himself in front of vehicles. And the fact that they complain that the league is putting experienced refs on that are able to kind of discern when it's an actual foul and when they're just hunting. Like, the fact that they actually were ballsy enough to say we need inexperienced refs that we can trick, just, it drives me nuts.
Totally. Well, and additionally, what I would say there is that, like, that's where I start thinking about the integrity of the game. And, you know, like, you guys listen to Open Floor. I'm not really, like, the preacher. That's more of Ben's job. But, yes. Like, I feel like that's a foul that the league, or that's a rule that the league devised to protect shooters on the way down. And so to then exploit that rule feels kind of wrong. And it's certainly not the spirit of the rule if James Harden is floating 2 and 3 feet forward and kicking his legs out. And so I'm glad that they're not making that call. And when you want to talk about like the letter of the rule book, like that is left to the discretion of the officials, and it should be. And there should be times when the ref says, no, that's not a natural movement. I'm not going to give you that call. And so, I mean, I think the one thing that has been heartening is I do think that like most of the NBA is kind of on the same page with this stuff. And that leaves the Rockets in a tough spot. And you saw like game two, they came out and they were not shamelessly pandering to the refs the entire night. And right. That was actually like kind of refreshing too. So like maybe they recognize that they sort of crossed the line this week, and we'll sort of correct the course from there.
We talked about the refs and like wanting less experienced refs on, and that weird angle to take. I do think there is a big factor of where they do get away with all this shit in the regular season. And I think there has to, if you're an NBA official and you're getting ready to work a Rockets game, I just can't help but think that your mindset the whole time is, how are they going to try to get one over on me here? Yeah. And how do I avoid being embarrassed if I call, like, you know, the famous one where Harden pretended Ingles hit him in the throat and he didn't even make contact with them. And it's like, I don't want to be the ref that gives him that call. And like,
totally.
I feel like the brighter lights of the playoffs actually have to hurt them in that regard.
Yeah, well, and that's where it becomes kind of a bigger conversation about Harden and the way he's chosen to approach every regular season and his failure to kind of change that approach at all in the playoffs. And like, I actually heard Ryan Russillo on Bill Simmons's podcast earlier this week make this point where like, once you're in the playoffs, these refs have a couple days of advance notice. They're not traveling afterwards. They're not reffing games one and two. Like, so they have time to actually prepare and scout these games, which isn't always true during the regular season. And I think that definitely affects the way they approach Harden. And it should, like, as much as you want to say, because I understand where Rockets fans would turn around and say, well, we got these calls all regular season. Why aren't we getting them in the playoffs? That makes sense to a point. But, like, the bottom line is, if you're not getting the calls because refs are playing or are paying closer attention to what you're actually doing, like, that's the way it goes. And that's the way it should go, because, like, we should want this to be as accurate as possible, even if that ends up hurting the Rockets because they've chosen to sort of, like, try to game the system to play the most efficient way possible when, like, James Harden could just hit 16-foot jumpers and open up the floor for himself. It's not that complicated, and yet here we are.
You know what else?
Right, and I think a big part, too, is not only refs are game planning. Like, this is something we see when you go to further rounds in the playoffs, too, right? Like, the Warriors, other teams are looking for, okay, how do they try to cheat the system? What type of moves do they do? Refs are looking at it. Players are looking at it. And when you get to a more experienced team like the Warriors – that has a lot of experience dealing with Harden and Chris Paul. Yeah. They're just not going to fall for things in the same way. And most players won't, unless you're like Serge Ibaka, who just doesn't seem to internalize any of the scouting report ever.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy. Like, watching the Warriors last night, I mean, first of all, there are like six players on that team at this point, which is insane to think about. But right. Then you watch them defend, and they're all like super, super disciplined and smart about the way they guard Harden and CP3. And, you know, nobody wants to sit here and like give too much credit to the Warriors. They do have four Hall of Famers on there, but it's really impressive to see them lock in and turn it up in this matchup. And like, I don't blame Harden for being frustrated, because basically, he's dealing with great defense no matter who he's dealing with in Golden State, whether it's, you know, Iguodala, Klay Thompson, Draymond on switches, even Looney has been pretty good. KD was holding his own.
Steph Curry, who some people say is the most underrated defender in league history.
You know what, though? Steph had a couple moments last night where
We're not doing this, Andrew.
You're hanging in there. I know. Yeah,
he's allowed to reach 18 times a game.
Nobody gets graded on a curve quite like Steph.
Yeah, well, this is the wrong podcast to talk about Steph's defense, but he's much further along than Harden is defensively. Yeah. So I don't know. He gets credit too.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing. I think the other thing that really plays against the Rockets, beyond like the stylistic stuff, not a lot of good hangs on that team. Like I don't know if there's a less likable, like, or less approachable star duo than Chris Paul and James Harden.
It's very true. And Harden, I don't know whether he just chooses not to reveal much of his personality or just doesn't have much of a personality, but like, there's just not a lot there. And CP3, I think, could be cool if he weren't wired quite so tight. Like,
he is tough.
It's yeah.
It seems he's real mean to his waiter.
Exactly. Like, it's just like take it down a couple notches, CP3. But I will say I really like PJ Tucker, and I've talked to him a couple times over the years for extended sit downs. And like, PJ Tucker is awesome.
Austin Rivers, great guy.
You know what? Austin Rivers is shockingly great to talk to. And it was very upsetting because he was like the best villain possible for years there, but he's cool. Really, outside of those two though. And D'Antoni is also pretty cool.
Yeah, it's just hard with those here too. Your two main guys on the podium every night, and you're just like, ah.
Yeah, it's tough.
There
man.
Was a – I don't know if either of you ever watched Community, but there was a character who shaved stars into his sideburns, and, like, the bit was that, like, Starburns did that in lieu of a personality. That's James Harden's beard.
Well, it is. I was going to say, the beard is really carrying James Harden a long, long way. So credit to him.
I feel like he seems to have a lot of fun when he's out and about. It. If this was a locker room without Chris Paul, I'd probably just suggest that he shows up to practice drunk, because I think that seems to like bring out the fun guy in him, and maybe that would help him bond with team.
Just go to the Diamond Lounge.
Yeah, you know, maybe we need more like 3-4 a.m. press conferences for James Harden, and that's how he can kind of come out of his shell a little bit publicly.
We talked about kind of Houston not making adjustments, and this round's been funny because this has been the round of the playoffs. Like, I don't remember being this excited for a round of the playoffs this early in a long time. And it's kind of been weird because the games have mostly been blowouts. Rockets Warriors has been kind of the only consistently close series. But that hasn't been a lot of fun. But I'm kind of interested as a founding member of Giannis Inc. What's kind of your read on how Giannis is dealing with the Celtics? Because it's my opinion that Giannis is the MVP this season. I think he was the best player over the course of 82 games. But it's kind of interesting to me when you see teams being able to kind of scheme and take him, limit his impact in the game, where you have guys like Kawhi Leonard or Kevin Durant, where no matter what a playoff defense does, they kind of go and get their own shot. What do you kind of see of Giannis getting his kind of first real taste of scheming further in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting. I mean, the second round in general, I hear what you're saying about the games not totally delivering. But the one thing that I love about all these matchups is, like, the stakes are really, really high. And just because of the uncertainty with some of these teams, and with Milwaukee, right, it's like, all right, you guys kicked everyone's ass for 7 months, and is it all going to fall apart here against this crappy Celtics team? And, like, so there's kind of a lot of pressure on everybody, which I'm really enjoying. And the Giannis,
they've also been fun, even though the games aren't close. Like, Toronto-Philly have been two really fun games so far.
Yeah, it's cool. And it's hard to read a lot of the matchups, too, because things swing so much from one game to the next. The Giannis thing, though, is a really interesting kind of story to watch, because, coming out of game two, there are a lot of Bucks fans pounding their chest, being like, all right, well, that's it. Giannis solved the Celtics. On to round three. And it's like, I don't think that's how it's going to go, because for 1.5 of those games, Giannis really struggled and struggled to kind of process things on offense. And the Celtics are able to throw Horford on him, who, like, it's funny talking to you guys, because I'm sure you hold Horford in lower esteem than almost anyone who watches basketball. I don't blame you.
I feel like we're actually probably the highest on him out of Cavs fans. Like, I think we both understand that, or at least my opinion has been, it's not really an indictment of Al Horford. It's more of one of the ways that kind of Tristan Thompson has been underappreciated, that he's a guy that's long enough and mobile enough to kind of limit Horford's impact. But Al Horford's a really, really good player. It's just funny that Milwaukee gave up a first for the wrong Cavs player.
It's wild. And look, I'm right there with you on Tristan Thompson being, like, criminally underappreciated, because he was also huge in some of those Warriors matchups too. But, like, the Giannis thing, I think it's going to seesaw back and forth between Giannis and Horford throughout that matchup. Obviously, I picked the Celtics to win this series, and I feel kind of gross picking, like, Al Horford to triumph over Giannis, who's probably my favorite basketball player.
But it's your team, so you make exceptions, right?
I know. Look, the heart is really torn in two different directions on this one. But as far as I'm concerned, like, it's still a complete toss-up, and I think we are seeing a lot of limitations with Giannis that he's going to have to solve over the next few years. Like, because I think there's no question he was the most dominant player in basketball for the entire regular season, but there are another step or two that he's going to have to figure out to get to that Kawhi Durant level, and he is going to struggle if the jumper isn't there, because, like, that's the thing is, Kawhi and Durant can get any shot they want and hit any shot they get. Whereas Giannis, like, he needs to be in his spots to really take over games. And the Celtics have, like, the exact personnel you would want to keep him from those spots and make his life miserable as he's there. And then, like, it's further complicated because you look around on the perimeter for the Bucks, and, like, most of these guys aren't actually players you're going to trust in big moments. And so I, like, the Celtics can pin down on Giannis without worrying about, like, Pat Connaughton or Sterling Brown, or even, like, Nikola Mirotic, like, really killing them. And so that makes it even harder.
Yeah. I will say though, like, cause I do think there's going to be this impulse to think that Giannis figured them out. Giannis is 9 for 28 on 2-point field goals in this series so far.
Like
this isn't the Giannis we know. Like, yeah, he's getting to the line and he shot 18 free throws in game two. So that helped. But like, I don't think he's quite figured out how to score efficiently on the Celtics team yet.
No way.
And I'm like, I don't trust any non-Chris Middleton member of this team right now.
Yeah. Well, and it's wild because like I was saying this all year long. I was like, look, like Giannis, the Celtics know how to slow him down. And I would have Bucks fans come out of the woodwork and be like, did you see his numbers in the Celtics series last year? Are you kidding me? Giannis is going to be absolutely fine. And it's like, now here we are. Like the Celtics are annoyingly great at just screwing with really good players. And that's what's happening here. And it's, I think the series is going to come down to like the Celtics, good players hitting tough shots, where the, whether it's Tatum, Kyrie, Jaylen Brown, whatever, Gordon Hayward versus like the Bucks, not really good players. I don't really trust any of these guys, but if they can hit open shots, they can win the series. But I think like, well, that's the matchup that I'm watching. It's like, all right, so is Jason Tatum going to be able to hit contested threes and contested pull-ups in the mid-range to actually beat this team? And like, we'll see. That to me, it's like a total 50-50 toss-up.
Yeah, and I also don't think Kyrie is going to have that many games where he scores 9 points on 18 shots. He's not really a guy that consistently has negative games like that in a series and was pretty phenomenal in game one.
He better not have another terrible game, because whenever Kyrie struggles, not even the takes, I just get bombarded with text messages from Ben Golliver during any bad Kyrie game, say like being like, oh, I thought he was a shot creator. I thought he could run the offense, this and that. And I'm just like, shut the fuck up. I did not sign up for this. We don't podcast for another team.
I'm a thing you're not even arguing.
It's terrible. It's really the worst thing on earth. Yes. So we need good Kyrie in game three. That's all I can say.
Speaking of victory lapping, when I announced to the world that I was betting on the Celtics to win this series, Justin said, and I quote, you can just give me your money. So so fuck you, Justin.
And well, I mean, that was me being a dick too, because I think I said that I think the Celtics have like a 30% chance of winning the series. And I would not be stunned if Boston won a championship this year.
Oh, come on.
I'm saying I could see three teams in the East potentially winning it. I think the Warriors are still the overwhelming favorite. But they just seem more prone to beat themselves than they have any other year, and I'm just kind of interested to see it as the playoffs progress.
Speaking of playoffs progressing, one of the things I'm interested in seeing is like right now the Celtics are kind of this intriguing wild card and nobody really has any idea what to make of them. But if they were to actually win this series, and by the way, like congrats to Carter. I think I saw the odds. They were plus 200.
I got it at plus 250.
Like, that's insane. I don't know who set those odds, but like, yeah, you got to bet at given the plus 250 odds. But beyond that, like the Celtics hype machine will go from like 0 to 100 if they actually win this series. And that's one of the things that I like. It occurred to me in the middle of game one that like right now I'm enjoying watching the Celtics and kind of like I picked them obviously, but I will regret any kind of Celtics faith I've had as soon as we hit the conference finals and everybody is talking about Brad Stevens like he is the greatest coach in history and like Jason Tatum is the next LeBron again and like all this shit. Like I don't know how we're all going to handle it if we get there, let alone the finals.
There's so few outcomes for this year that don't result in just some nauseating takes. this is part of why I hate Houston so much, is because they almost make me want to root for Golden State. Like I kind of want them to be done. I want it to be a sweep. I don't want to think about them. I don't want to think about the takes that would come from them actually beating the Warriors. Oh, man. And yeah, the Jason Tatum takes.
Well, yeah, like, I mean, I don't even know. I mean, Jason Tatum wasn't the next LeBron. He was more just like the next savior in Boston. But like, I don't know what would happen. All. Yeah, exactly. If the Celtics won the title, which I actually agree with you, Justin, like, I don't think
it's... Oh, come on, guys. What are we doing?
No, I'm not picking it. I can just see it. I can see it. Oh,
here's the deal. Here's the deal, okay? I would never pick the Celtics. I just can't be that guy. But, like, they do match up fairly well with Golden State. And Golden State has 6.5 players right now. And, like, who knows where we'll be in 3 or 4 weeks with that Warriors team. I don't think they hate each other anymore, but I do just kind of think they're shorthanded right now. Mm-hmm. And that's going to make things really interesting against whoever comes out of the East. And so, like, let's say the Celtics have maybe a 5 to 10% shot at actually winning the title. If they won the title, I don't even know how we would react to that, because it just basically, like, invalidates the entire regular season, where we all have to turn around and be like, this team sucked for like 7 months. They don't really like each other. Kyrie leaving after a Celtics title would be one of the most amazing things of all time.
And have a hard time doing it with the Cavs pretty shortly after.
I was about to say, you were literally describing the 2016 Cavs. They didn't like each other for most of the year. They didn't play well for most of the year, but somehow they won.
Yeah, you know, it could happen. I don't know. I haven't even wrapped my head around that scenario and all the implications that come with it.
If they win, I'm just going to smoke a joint. I'm going to walk out into a field and just really think hard, hard about the shape of the earth.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Close your ears, Thrones fans. He's going to pull a Melisandre. He's just going to, you know.
Yeah. And maybe we all will, you know.
Walk off into the night. The thing about these playoffs to me that I find the most interesting is that the last few years, it's been just so predetermined that it's going to be Cavs and Warriors. And even when the Cavs were flawed, there was this kind of inevitability that was around it. But I just feel like all 8 teams that are left in the playoffs all kind of stink in their own ways. Like, they all have, like, these huge problems, especially this Raptors-Sixers series, which somehow has, like, 8 top, you know, 100 players and only 10 players that can play at all in the series.
It's pretty wild. I mean, I was just in Toronto, and I got to say, like, I almost feel bad because after game one, I was so blown away by Kawhi and that fit of that Raptors starting five that, like, everyone I talked to in Toronto was, like, really, really high on the Raptors. And for the first time in my life as an NBA reporter and basketball fan, I was also high on the Raptors. So they were talking about, like, oh, yeah, like, I think we're the favorites in the East. And, like, and once we get to the finals, like, all bets are off. And I was like, yeah, I completely agree with that. And then I started talking to people about potentially returning in June and all this other stuff that, like, horribly jinxed the Raptors. And then game two happens and you look up and you're like, oh, that's right. You guys actually only have 5
Is
players.
That Jody Meeks?
Play. Yeah, Jody Meeks. Jody Meeks was the red flag that I think sort of signaled to everybody that, like, maybe we've sort of put the cart before the horse with the Raptors, where it's like, all right, this could get kind of interesting.
Yeah,
it's sad to see my guy Fred VanVleet just not be a player anymore. It's the other thing too. Game one, I had kind of the same reaction where I was like, you know what? I could see a scenario where Toronto wins it all. I'm like, maybe Kawhi is the best player in the Eastern Conference, at least when it comes to adapting to the playoff game. Yeah. And then I was sitting there in game two. I'm like, oh, God, does Kawhi need to go for 40 every game to win? Like, and we were having an argument in our Chase Down Discord earlier in the day of whether or not the Clippers actually provide him with a good opportunity. And I was like, well, I think the Clippers can offer him an opportunity where he can go out and have to do everything the same as Toronto. So maybe Toronto's not that much better.
I think Toronto would look better if their 2 players who are selectively very unselfish stopped being so fucking stubborn. Like, how many times can Marc Gasol, who I just adore, is one of my favorite players that I've ever watched, how many times is he going to pass open a wide open pick and pop 3 to make the extra pass to Danny Green, who is less open than him.
Mm-hmm.
Like it, yeah. Like they need those kind of buckets. Like if this is to be their team, their starters have to do better. And like, I'm actually not that worried about this series still, because Philly is just as flawed, except their starters also don't work.
Right.
So I think they're going to win the series. And I still think they're going to make the finals. But like, again, just like every single team, especially in the East, these four teams, they're all really good, but they all have these very interesting flaws that make strategy really interesting. Because one little switch, like putting Embiid on Siakam instead of Gasol, can throw a wrench in this beautiful machine of an offense that the Raptors did in game one.
Yeah, well, and my question with the Raptors all year and even through the first few weeks of the playoffs, which I stupidly threw out the window after game one against the Sixers, but like my question was always with Gasol and Lowry, I understand that in theory they can hit shots, and Lowry hit shots at the end of game two that had his numbers looking better, and everybody was like, oh, people are being too hard on Lowry. I don't know, like at some point if you're passing up that many open looks and you're not really like providing the offense that the team needs, like you're just not good anymore. And so like I wonder whether Gasol and Lowry are just not the players that we think of them as. And obviously I think people have already kind of like adjusted their expectations, so they're not asking for like all-star Marc Gasol or all-star Kyle Lowry, but like even against that curve, I'm not sure if they're going to be able to deliver
a cool 14 points from Gasol. Exactly.
And I don't know, man. So like, I get that he's unselfish, but if he's not hitting those shots or not taking those shots, maybe it's because he can't hit them. And like, if you're kicking to Danny Green, like he hasn't been hitting shots either. So I don't know. I have more questions on the Raptors, and yet Kawhi is just a fucking maniac and like could just go out and render all of it irrelevant because he's that good. And you're right that like the Sixers have even more questions. And when you're pinning your hopes to Jimmy Butler, like that's kind of scary too.
The thing that drives me nuts though, is that Nick Nurse didn't really give Gasol the starting role right from the trade deadline. Like it was only really the last week where he kind of became the full-time starter. And I just feel like if he would have had more time to develop chemistry and a more of an understanding of his role, like I feel like he's a smart enough player to understand, okay, I do actually have to take a shot here or there. But it is interesting when you run into players like Gasol, Al Horford, and Jokic. They're just so smart and they're so unselfish. But sometimes that pass first nature, if you don't have someone else around you that's being aggressive, it really can end up hurting the team.
Yeah. Well, and Horford at least understands that, like, all right, when I'm open on the roll from three, like I'm taking that shot and I'm going to get it off quickly. And that's just the way the offense is going to work. Jokic is more of a wild card where he'll have nights where you look out and like everyone understands that he's the most talented player on the floor, but he's still just like 50% as aggressive as he should be. But I think that's one where like, as he gets older, that will kind of like, he'll age out of that. Gasol, I just have no idea what to make of him at this point. And it's going to be really, you're right, because like there are just like these glaring questions with each of these teams that make them really difficult to trust. But that's also part of why I kind of like the playoffs for the first time in like 3 or 4 years, because this can go any number of directions.
I completely agree. But, you know, I think we're really doing ourselves a disservice by not talking about the most interesting series so far, which is Nuggets Blazers. I'm just kidding.
You leave my large adult son, Jamal Murray, alone.
I'm just kidding.
You hear me?
That's going to be such a well-played series, and no one's going to give a shit.
You know what? I do want to apologize to Justin, because I've thought about this and I feel guilty about this, but like I'm kind of out on Jamal Murray.
That's okay.
Jamal
is like the Kyrie experience. He's like the same drug as Kyrie with worse come downs.
Well, yes. But so it's not just Jamal Murray though, because I'm also out on RJ Barrett and I'm also out on Andrew Wiggins. And I'm beginning to wonder whether I'm just like racist against Canadians.
Yeah,
and
drop me a pin, fan.
Yeah, I don't know. We're going to have to work through this over the next few years. I need some Canadian prospects I believe in. I love Steve Nash, but like, I don't know what's happening.
You complimented here. Tristan earlier. So
that's true. Tristan, I'm a believer through and through.
That's the, I have a black friend of Canada. Hate.
I appreciate Tristan Thompson in the 2016 finals.
Yeah. You are exempt. Before we wrap up though, we're running a little low on time here. But you know, we're 1.5 rounds into the playoffs, and playoffs engender some steaming hot takes out of all of us. Andrew, I talked to you about this before. I want to go around the room, the proverbial room, and ask you, what's the very worst take you have about the playoffs so far that you wholeheartedly believe?
Okay. So I had two, and number one is not related to the playoffs, but it happened in the last week. That Vox article about not liking battle episodes and battle, like Game of Thrones battle episodes. I agree with that article and I feel terrible about it. I was watching Game of Thrones with my wife last night and was kind of like complaining about it. And my wife was like, please don't be that guy. And I hate that I am that guy, but I am. So that's number one.
I like it and kind of agree with you.
Okay.
I think Stu Gotts had the best line where he's like, they can afford dragons, magic, all this stuff, but they can't afford a lantern.
Dude, yeah, the lighting. And then also I was just kind of like looking around being like, it's been 20 minutes since I heard a character say anything. And I want to care about this, but I'm kind of lost with what's
dog,
happening.
I feel for the Dothraki, man. That was such a depressing end to that arc.
Justin,
for
real. Justin doesn't really have to worry too much about the lighting, though, because he can't see through a haze of a bong smoke. That already, limits him, so he's used to it.
I vape, fam. Don't give me that.
There you go. There you go. All right. So then my second hot take that I definitely believe it. I feel bad about believing it. This is another one where like, don't be that guy applies. But coming out of in the middle of Thunder Blazers, I texted a group chat that I'm in and said, Westbrook has been so bad that Lillard is going to come out of this series wildly overrated.
Oh, I love this.
I don't want to say that Lillard is wildly overrated, but I do think he's mildly overrated at this point. And he's now, that story is going to continue as he like tears Justin's boy, Jamal Murray, to shreds for the next 2 weeks. And we're going to come out of this playoffs talking about Lillard like he's like a top five guy, when in reality, I love him. But I would not take him. I would not put him in like the group of 8 or 9 guys that like you can actually build a contender around.
Yeah, he's not in the Steph tier. And I love, because people are like, look what he's doing. He did that in the West too. And I'm like, well, he was being defended by Russ and Dennis Schroeder. Like,
there's an asterisk next to that one, you know, quote unquote the West. I don't know how seriously we want to take these teams.
Yeah, the West. The if the East is AAA, the West this year, pretty close to AA. Justin.
And I said that, by the way, and was immediately like reviled by everyone I said
it
to. Wow,
everyone. Like, oh, you're the worst. You know, a lot of Mavericks are not appreciated in their time, Andrew.
Yes, so. Exactly. So just doing what I can for truth.
Hold the faith. Justin, what's your terrible take that you believe?
Ooh. This is a good question. I should have given this some more thought. I've had Ben Simmons takes, because I somehow have become a Ben Simmons stan, and I don't understand it, because he's really not that likable.
He's a Houston Rocket honorary.
Yeah. We need to find a way to get him onto the Knicks with Kyrie and Durant.
By the way,
just be the most miserable.
Before you fully launch into your point, Justin, I'll tell you right now why you like Ben Simmons now. It's because Twitter hates him.
Which, by the way, that's a fair reason to like anything.
Yep, couldn't agree more. Man. But
that is good.
Is your just take that he's good?
Yeah, my take is that he's good. That might be a hot take. It's funny. So everyone talked about LeBron rising over the competition in the East and how big the discrepancy was. There's no real competition there. I think there is there was a smaller gap between LeBron and his competition than Brad Stevens and the rest of the coaches left in the East. And that is not a compliment on Brad Stevens. I do not believe in any of these coaches right now. Every time I look at the Bud face, I just immediately think back to the Cavs hitting open threes every 2 seconds. I do not believe in Brett Brown, and Nick Nurse does not do it for me.
No, I think that's – I don't even think that's a terrible take. I think all these coaches have been marginal at best.
I don't necessarily know how to, like, gauge great coaching. I guess
not,
it's sort
lining
of like
up Serge Ibaka and Embiid's bench minutes. That's right, how you can tell.
That's the thing. Bud, I don't know. I think that Bucks roster beyond, like, the top three guys is just, like, secretly kind of shaky. And so he doesn't have a lot of great alternatives. But, again, like with Horford – I don't blame you guys for having absolutely no respect for Coach Bud in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, like the thing is, I understand. So we talked about it earlier. There, with Giannis still offensively, you have to make some adjustments. You have to get him some easier looks. I think at times he's isolated him and had everyone else on the other side of the court, so there's a little more room for him to operate. And but the fact that he isn't able to get Giannis more easy looks, maybe that's something that'll change throughout the series, but I'd really like to see that, because even though he has limitations, and this actually applies to Simmons too, even though they have limitations and they don't necessarily have an established jumper, I do think that there are ways to use them that would help optimize their games a little more than they have been so far.
For sure. The thing with Simmons that I wonder about, like, he should be playing like Draymond and just setting screens and then catching it on the roll and creating from there. And like,
exactly.
I don't know whether it's Simmons or Brett Brown that is preventing that blueprint from becoming
Elton Brand.
Thing. Yeah. I have no idea, you know, young Billy King or Billy Young King or whatever Ben said about Elton Brand, but like, whatever the plan is in Philly, they should think harder about it.
they totally spaced, man.
they should take some more time to process.
Oh shit! Oh fuck you.
Yeah.
There we go. Carter, what's your hot take?
My take, and I was really trying to talk myself off this ledge. I know we touched on it a little bit on the front end. I think Warriors Rockets game one made me like basketball a little bit less. Like,
wow.
I thought you were going to go the other way.
No.
That made you like him more.
No,
like,
that's the real horrible thing.
I was morally like, I've never felt more like Mike Francesa or like one of these like hot take radio jocks than when I was watching that game. Cause it was like, it was really ugly, because I think a lot of people obviously are placing blame on the Rockets. And I think the Rockets actually kind of let the Warriors off the hook a little bit with their audit after that game. Like, that took all the heat off the Warriors. But what I hated so much about that game was the Rockets would do some bullshit and like accentuate some contact and get a foul. Mm-hmm. And then the Warriors, in an attempt to say fuck you to the Rockets for doing that, would then like Draymond Green would like get screened and fall over. And it was just like this horrible game of one-upsmanship where both teams completely stopped trying to win the game and were more focused on tricking the refs. And I just hated it so much that I just like, I wanted to wash my hands of the whole series. Like game two was so much better, but it made me like genuinely worried for the future of the NBA. I feel like I'm like moralizing. Oh my God.
Well, the good thing that came from that, though, is because they weren't focused and they almost forgot that it was a high-pressure playoff game, Steph hit a big shot in a playoff game.
Oh, boy.
That was good.
I think that's a good take from Carter, because there are times the NBA, more than any other league, is the sport that, like, trends dangerously close to the opening scenes from basketball, where like you look around and you're like, why do people like this sport? Like, this is the most dystopian shit ever. And there are times like throughout each season where there are like a flurry of trade demands, everybody's resting, and then like game one, Golden State, Houston, like was more of the same. And so I am hopelessly addicted to basketball, and we're all part of this world. I do this professionally, but like, I also sometimes talk to friends who don't really care about the NBA and will just like mock NBA Twitter being like, oh my God, like Steph's 3-point vine or whatever. And not Steph, who is it? Who is a better example? Maybe Giannis. But like, just mock us like freaking out at this random bullshit. And then,
oh my God, this league.
This league culture.
This league Twitter is what they're mocking, basically. And then you look up and like, that's the biggest game of the season. And it's like completely unwatchable.
Have you ever seen a very high profile game, like Warriors Rockets game one, feature less basketball analysis?
No, that was another thing that I forgot to mention when we talked about it on Open Floor, but like, I thought that the commentating from Van Gundy was like not great, because they focused in on the refs, and that sort of like set the tone for like another 36 hours of a kind of InfoWars type discussion about the officiating. But like, everybody should just kind of like take it down a notch on that front, because that like the refs, that's part of the game.
I tweeted,
it didn't kill my love of basketball, but it did pretty much get me off Twitter, because I just looked up and down. It was basically the Grandpa Simpson gif. I was ready to leave. I was like, oh, we're still talking about refs. Huh?
Do people know that everyone hates Scott Foster? I mean, every player in the whole NBA and the FBI hates Scott Foster.
Oh man, oh. Scott Foster is the us of refs. Ah. So, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on. This was a lot of fun. We really do appreciate it. To all our listeners, if you're not already checking out Andrew at Sports Illustrated and the Open Floor Podcast, you probably should be doing that. Although I doubt anyone that's a big enough junkie that listens to us, they're probably consuming other basketball media. So yeah. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you to our listeners. Thank you to Carter for putting up with me. I really appreciate that. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, cook those books, and take advantage of the flop Apple metrics. And if you want to be part of our Discord chat, send a screenshot of your review to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we'll send you an invite. So thanks again, and until next time, go Cavs.